You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And happy hump day afternoon across Wisconsin and beyond. We got a jam-packed show for you this afternoon. I'll give you that lineup in just a moment. But we do have some breaking news for everyone this afternoon. There are reports coming from inside the Evers camp that within the next day or so, Governor Tony Evers here in Wisconsin will be announcing that he is not running for a third term. Again, sources from inside Evers' administration and political machine are potentially letting some word leak out that he will not be seeking a third term. This comes on the heels of reporting over the last 2 days that while at least one Republican candidate for the governorship has raised significant money, namely from the Winklevoss twins. Yeah, those were the guys that apparently the Zuckerberg stole Facebook from. Yeah, those guys have contributed millions. That the current governor's fundraising is quite low to date based on the last reporting period. On the heels of that reporting over the last 24 hours, again, reports coming from inside Evers' circle that he may be announcing within the next 24 to 36 hours that he is not seeking re-election in a third term. Certainly a big bomb to be dropped here in the state of Wisconsin. Of course, this also comes on the heels of some fairly pointed criticism of the governor's approach to the state's biennial budget. We're going to discuss the biennial budget, how to handle criticism within the Democratic Party, how to build a bigger tent, and how to win elections with State Senator Chris Larson today at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. And at the bottom of this hour at 4:30, I'll be joined by Dr. Kristen Lierley for a very, very special installment of this segment that we call Broad Appeal. Today, no special guests other than Dr. Lierley and I, and we'll be throwing it open to you, our listeners, specifically our female listeners, to ask you some questions about how you're feeling these few months into the Trump administration, post big brutal bill. Do you have experiences trying to access critical support like Medicaid or food stamps? Have you had trouble wading through the administrative red tape? Are you concerned about speaking out about your concerns regarding our democracy? We'll dive deep at 4:30 with Dr. Lierley. Again, our female listeners will go to the top of the caller list during that segment. But right now, I'm really excited to be joined by Dr. Josh Bivens, a PhD economist and the chief economist with the Economic Policy Institute. Welcome to the show, Josh. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with this. Over the last couple of days, there has been some pretty big news in what I would just call the economics field. Two things in particular. First, yesterday, the announcement that inflation has ticked up to 2.7%. This coming after, again, Donald Trump head fainting towards more tariffs. But again, nobody really knows. We've had these so-called deadlines bumped a number of times. Now we're looking at potentially an August 1st deadline for the reciprocal tariffs. Again, inflation bumping up to 2.7%. What does all that mean for the cost of things that our families depend on? That's issue number one. Issue number two is that over the last 48 hours, Donald Trump has been employing some of the same political tactics that he has used in the past to signal potential firings, this time directed at Fed Chair Jerome Powell. So, Dr. Bivens, I'd like to start there this afternoon. First, let's put the inflation number in context. Is this an indicator that we're starting to see some of these inflationary impacts of Donald Trump's tariff terror, or what are we looking at here?
I would say it's a little early to say that for sure, but this is what it would look like. I mean, if you think about how the effect of the tariffs are going to feed through to higher prices for people, higher inflation, it's going to be gradual. And it makes some sense that some companies have so far like been willing to eat the tariff and not pass it on to customers because the administration's so erratic. Maybe it'll go away. Maybe they don't have to alienate their own customers. Maybe they just hold out. I think they're starting to realize, like, whatever happens a year from now, tariffs are going to be quite a bit higher than, say, January 2025. And so their willingness to eat those tariffs and not pass them on to customers, I think, is going to erode. So again, you know, maybe it ticks down next month, but this is what it's going to look like. It's not going to be inflation going from 2 to 10 in a single month. It's just going to be a steady sort of, can you drip upwards? It's going to be sort of a steady upward rise. And that's what it's going to feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. Here's the thing. I'm going to put this in very lay terms. If I was a business owner, what I would be looking at, especially if I relied upon sourcing parts from abroad, or I relied upon foreign trading partners as the customers of my goods, what I would be looking at is, I'm certainly not going to be in a better position in a year from now. And so just facing that level of uncertainty in my business would cause me to, frankly, hold on to cash, not make capital improvements, not be looking at increasing my employees' wages. In other words, I might be kind of hunkering down and seeing what and how the storm plays out. Is that a fair sort of lay characterization? Of course, that's going to vary by industry, but at a very high level, would that be a fair characterization?
Yeah, I think totally. I would say, like, it'd be one thing if the tariffs just went up to a high level and stuck and were totally predictable. That would not be great, but at least it would allow you to do some planning as a business. The sort of utter chaos with which you're being implemented is just death for investment planning in that regard. You know, ironically, I think the chaos and the you know, making it impossible for businesses to plan investment, that's what makes, like, a recession more likely over the next year. That's why you see an increase in recession probability. All else equal, that recession probability is probably pushing down on inflation. And so it's sort of like two things. It's like, in the very short run, we've got complete inability to plan, increased risk of recession. In the long run, it's just, well, things are going to be more expensive because they're going to have a tariff on top of them. So higher inflation whenever we get out of the recession. And so it is just a very confused time in the economy generally. Neither outcomes are good at all, but it's not clear which bad outcome is going to be the first one, like, bearing down on us.
Yes. Which sort of pain we are going to feel, but no question there will be some pain. Let's talk about recession risk for a moment. Specifically, the fact that markets rely, and investors and business owners have relied for decades, maybe even well over 100 years in this country, on the independence of the Federal Reserve. All else being equal, if Donald Trump fires Jerome Powell, the current chairperson of the Fed, I would say recession risk goes up, market volatility goes up. Explain to folks why it is the case that it is so critical for all democracies in particular, but the United States especially, to have an independent central bank here, an independent Federal Reserve chair.
Basically, the importance is that you want the Fed, which is basically in charge of balancing the risks of unemployment rising versus the risk of inflation rising. Generally, not always, but generally, those two things kind of trade off. If you try to push unemployment really low, you get higher risk of inflation. If you let if you decide inflation needs to be super, super low, you might tolerate too high unemployment. And so you've got these two very bad things that you kind of have to toggle against each other. And the thought is, like, in any short run period, a president might have very strong ideas about which way they want that toggling to go. Usually they want lower unemployment as an election bears down on us. And sometimes if you try to push unemployment down when other policies are also pushing up inflation, you create, like, kind of a perfect storm of inflation that not only goes up, but gets really embedded and gets very hard to bring back down. And, like, one classic example of this is that the Federal Reserve chair under the Nixon administration, by most accounts, was way too solicitous of what Nixon wanted as an election came up, kept interest rates low, even as inflationary pressures were building all over the place. In the 70s were a period of high and very embedded inflation. It was very hard to get back down. And so that's why you want an independent Fed. I'll also say it goes the other way. Like, through most of the 2010s, you had a lot of political pressure from Congress, Republicans in Congress, who did not really want the economy to succeed on President Obama's watch. And they said, you know what, Fed, you're trying too hard to push unemployment down. You should be more worried about inflation. You should raise interest rates. And the Fed, wisely during that time, did not do it. They said, no way. Inflation is well below 2%. Unemployment's still too high. We're going to keep trying to push unemployment down. That was the right call. they were politically insulated from pressure from Congress. They should also be politically insulated from pressure from an administration. And so it's like having a good faith operator trying to make those calls rather than a very partisan operator interested in the next election making the call provides a level of stability to an economy that is really valuable.
Folks, that's Dr. Josh Bivens, the chief economist with the Economic Policy Institute. You can see his work as well as all of the big thinkers from the EPI at epi.org. Let me stitch a couple of things together and just to gauge your reaction. Part of the work of the Economic Policy Institute, your vision, is that we can have a just and strong, sustainable and equitable economy that really works for workers. Let's say that most of us agree that that's what we should have, and that most working people accurately perceive that the game, if you will, is a little bit rigged. Here's what I'm going to stitch together for you, and we may have to take care of a little business, and then I'll get your reaction on the other side. But here are the dominoes. An individual that is not being manipulated or pressured for short-term political interests also serves working people best, because in the United States, where money has an outsized influence on politics, it is not hard to envision where the billionaire and mega corporations are able to exert extraordinary pressure on elected officials whose campaigns they fund, and if in turn those very elected officials make the Fed beholden to them, well, you're just one middleman away from mega corporations and billionaires with incredibly advantageous tax incentives effectively puppeteering the Fed. That means the Fed isn't objective and isn't doing the things that will work to help working people. And again, most folks, you start talking inflation and unemployment and these dueling objectives and it gets a little murky. But at a very high level, to me, the independent Fed is one small bulwark against our systems being even more so owned and again puppeteered by the billionaire, hundred millionaire, and mega corporation class. Just a quick reaction. We've got about 30 seconds. We'll come back and I'll let you speak more fulsomely to this in a moment. Thoughts, Dr. Bivens?
Yeah. Super quick reaction. I'll just say the Fed was created precisely to make sure that there is a public person in charge of helping the economy bounce back from crisis. That the person who used to be in charge of that was Wall Street, banks. Basically, the economy suffering, who gets credit? Wall Street decides. Now we have a public sector that's deciding. That's a real gain.
We're going to pick that right up where we left it. How does the Fed help regular people? When we come back on the Maggie Dawn Show with Dr. Josh Bivens right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. This half hour, we're joined by the chief economist for the Economic Policy Institute, Dr. Josh Bivens. You can check out all the work by EPI at epi.org. Just before the break, I asked you a big, huge, natty question and then said, you got 30 seconds to answer. But to just bring folks up to speed, if you're just joining us, my question was this. In our democracy, where since 1976 and certainly since Citizens United, money has grown in influence over politics. Some would argue it has been an incredibly corrupting influence. One of the reasons we have an independent Federal Reserve is to prevent politicians with, I would say, some near-term political cycle incentives from effectively using the Fed to service their own interests. And if you follow my logic here, if big money donors are the ones that are basically picking and choosing our politicians, I would argue, especially on one side of the party ledger, and we lose the independence of the Fed, well, that then means that the Fed isn't working to ensure an economy that works for the vast majority of us, but rather an economy that works for only the ultra wealthy and mega corporations. You're explaining that that was exactly the problem and one of the reasons for the existence of a Fed, a public servant that is trying to look out for the macroeconomic best interests of all of us.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the history of the Fed, the reason why it was founded was because it used to be the case that during really bad economic crises, which happened much more often back in the 1800s, crazy boom bust cycle, when it went down, basically, if you were a Main Street firm or a worker and you were just hoping for some like credit to help the business go along and limp through the financial catastrophe, it basically came down to, did J.P. Morgan, the person, not the bank, want that business to go on or not? And if he did, it went on. If he didn't, it didn't go on. And that's just obviously not the optimal way to decide like how crisis should be managed in the U.S. economy. And so that's how the Fed was originally created. And since then, I think you're right. Like it's become this central part of the U.S. economy that takes on this very important job of toggling like unemployment and inflation and trying to make sure both stay as low as they possibly can be, even as they start to trade off against each other. And I would say it's even gotten a little better than that in the sense of like, not only has it been mostly resistant to like party or almost totally resistant to partisan capture since the Nixon era anyway, it, you know, the structure of the Fed does give the financial sector a bit too much power. They've got the ability to decide on the regional Federal Reserves, who goes on those boards of directors. But I would say in the past 15 years, there's been this incredibly admirable move to sort of name that and recognize it. And I think the Fed has actually behaved in ways that really have prioritized sort of typical working people over the interests of finance a lot in the past 15 years. They are actually a pretty open institute that listens to criticism and takes on evidence-based arguments. And they don't always go the exact way I want them to go. I think they make mistakes, but it is not just sort of a consistent bias towards the powerful. It is just a, I think at this point, become a very good faith evidence-based institution trying to do its best. And that's really rare these days in US government. And so anything that threatens to corrupt that, especially given the importance of what they do, would be really catastrophic.
Yeah, if you think it's bad now, and that happens, woo-nilly. And what I can only call ironic at the least, completely two-faced and ridiculous at the worst, Donald Trump said today about Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, quote, "He's a terrible Fed chair. I was surprised he was appointed." Wah, wah. Donald Trump, of course, appointed Jerome Powell. Okay, setting that aside, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, which is headline news on EPI's website, again, that's epi.org, is that the costs of the newly expanded budget for deportations in the hundreds of billions of dollars is going to actually end up costing U.S. citizens jobs. Explain, if you would, Dr. Bivens.
Yeah, so my colleague Ben Zipperer has done a really impressive report looking at evidence from previous instances of really ramped up immigration enforcement. Basically what happened as it was rolled out in various communities to employment in those places where this enhanced immigration enforcement was rolled out. And you see a predictable like decline in population as immigrants are deported. But it has profound employment impacts, and they're not just on the immigrants who are deported. And so he finds that if we do 1 million deportations every year for the next 4 years, which is the Trump administration goal, we end up with 6 million fewer jobs in the U.S. economy. 2.5 million of those losses are actually U.S. born workers.
Shocking numbers. 2.5 million fewer jobs, 6 million fewer, 2.5 million fewer jobs for U.S. born workers, 6 million fewer jobs. Again, this is going to have incredible ripple effects across the economy. And if you will, and if you would allow me, the Bermuda Triangle of terrible, no good, very bad economic policy, politicizing the Fed, completely uncertain tariff environment and inflationary environment based on that tariff pressure, plus a massive reduction in the U.S. workforce. Folks, that does not look good for any of us. We've got just about 30 seconds left. Dr. Bivens, address Wisconsinites. Why should Wisconsinites care about an independent Fed and a vibrant and vibrant labor force in the U.S. economy?
In terms of the Fed, I think the last 4 years are the best example. Like, we had all this inflationary pressure that came from the pandemic, but we got through it really quickly. And we got through it mostly because people believed that the Fed would not let inflation run out of control. That belief was based on the independence of the Fed. If that's gone, future episodes of inflation are going to be much harder to pull back down and last much longer.
If you thought it's been bad, it will only get worse without an independent Fed. Thank you, Dr. Bivens. Come back with me and Dr. Lyerly to talk about the impacts of the big, brutal bill, especially on women. What are your concerns? We discuss next here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're not every woman. It's Kristen and me. It's 4:30. It's time for Broad Appeal here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm joined this half hour by Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Today's a special installment of Broad Appeal. Kristen and I don't have any other guests. We just want to talk with you. And our female callers will be given priority. We want to know what you, ladies, and men, you're welcome to, but especially the ladies out there, given that it is our Broad Appeal segment. What are you feeling about the big, brutal bill? Let me give you an idea of what we're looking for, what we're hoping that you might share with us this afternoon. I've heard many stories over the years of moms, especially, who have skipped meals to make sure that their kids are fed. Families that don't fill prescriptions or ration prescriptions so that they can pay rent or just maintain their overall health insurance. By nearly all objective measures, all that's going to get worse under the big, brutal bill. So Kristen and I want to hear from you. Have you ever had to skip a meal or delay critical health care because you couldn't afford it? What did that feel like for your family? Have you ever had trouble navigating your benefits under Medicare or Medicaid or the Affordable Care Act? What was the hardest part? Did you lose coverage? What impact did that have on you? And are you worried that these program cuts could face women, could force women and families to make really, really heartbreaking decisions about the health, wellness, and nutrition in their families? What does that feel like for you? Kristen and I want to hear from you. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Dr. Lyerly, I can only imagine that over your years of practice, you've heard some of these stories. What's it like to be a physician and see your patients struggling with what are basic needs and having to prioritize feeding kids over rent or getting the health care that they need? What does that feel like as a practitioner?
I've heard these stories. I've lived these stories. Growing up, we were on food stamps. My parents, you know, long story short, my father died. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. She ended up being able to get a minimum wage job. It was $4.25 an hour back then, but we were barely getting by. And that was a struggle. So to grow up and be a physician in a situation of privilege like I am right now is an entirely different life than I lived when I was a child. But I see, you know, my kids, of course, looking to the future, wondering how they are going to be able to build a future that will serve them. You know, they're not barely making ends meet. How are they going to save for their retirement and potentially build a family, buy a house? I mean, my oldest son is a teacher and he knows that he can't do those things, those common things that many people want in their lives because he can't afford it. And then I talk to my patients, many of whom don't pick up essential medications like birth control pills because they went to the pharmacy and they were told that it was going to be $25 and they just didn't have that extra $25. So they're going without. And it's so frustrating. And to know that it's going to get worse, Maggie, not better.
Yeah.
My heart is breaking for America, and not just for Democrats and for people who voted for Democrats. But I mean, think about people who put their trust in Donald Trump, thinking that he was the guy, he was going to be different. And they believed the things that he said because they needed something different. The government wasn't working for them. And now here we are. And it's even worse than it was before.
Yeah, I think the dissatisfaction levels and frankly, the distrust is going to get far, far worse before it gets better. Ladies, if you're out there, this is your chance. Have you ever had to choose between food or rent and medicine for your family? Have you not taken your kid to the doctor because you didn't have health insurance? Have you let an illness for you or your partner or your kids go far too long? What were the impacts? What did that make you feel like? Men, you can chime in too, but it is broad appeal, so ladies will take preference on the phone lines. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. In my own family, my dad growing up lost his father when he was very young. And he has very specific, almost photographic memories of what then went on in his family, that what sacrifices his mother made to just keep their family barely afloat. And so this is not new for working families. But I think the acuity and frankly the cruelty in the rationale that Republicans have made for this, it has been only and exclusively to fund massive violations of civil rights and basic constitutional protections, to lock people up in concentration camps that have never ever committed a crime in their life here in the United States, and to give tax breaks to billionaires, hundred millionaires, and corporations like Amazon, and frankly, to give tax cuts to people like Jeffrey Epstein. It's shocking to me that the party of so-called family values is bear-hugging this kind of cruelty towards working families. One of the things that concerns me particularly, Dr. Lyerly, is basic nutritional assistance. We're going to be talking to the executive director of Feeding Wisconsin on Friday. I've been seeing reports from folks that run food banks here in Wisconsin and across the country that they simply will not be able to gap fill the massive shortfalls that will occur because of these draconian cuts to emergency food assistance through the big brutal bill. One of the questions that I want to hear from listeners about is, have you ever suffered what I'm gonna call the death of 1,000 paperwork cuts? Meaning you're working, you're trying to get your kids to school, you're trying to get all these things done. There are 24 hours in the day and you have to at least sleep a few of them. And the additional administrative burdens, these additional paperwork obstacles, which will only in the end push eligible people off of these programs. You know, how has that occurred before in your life? Have you faced those things? Again, to what end? It just seems so immeasurably cruel. And the idea that, oh, well, our food banks will be able to make up the difference is simply false.
No. Our food banks will not be able to make up the difference. And it's a double hit because the SNAP benefits have been cut, but so have the nonprofits who fill those gaps. And they are not going to be able to be there to be that safety net for the safety net that we've had in place. We're already seeing it. I mean, here in Green Bay, there are a number of organizations that try to link farmers, local farmers, with local folks who need that food assistance, and they are struggling to make ends meet, having to dip into their pockets, having to go to more of the benefactors, the private benefactors in the area, who are frankly tapped out. The system was tense before, and now it's just brittle. It's breaking, and we haven't even started to see the effects of this terrible Trump tax bill.
Yeah, I... None of this stuff is light, like a light switch flipping on and off. And I think sometimes it makes it more challenging for people to get their arms around it. But the erosion of these programs, the pain that the brutal bill will cause families is real. And the fact that it may happen slowly in some instances doesn't negate that it's hurting working people. It's hurting working poor folks, it's not going to help the middle class. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Kristen, I want to hear from you. Again, have you and your family ever struggled with the administrative burdens of accessing benefits or programs that you are entitled to, that you are eligible for while you're working, for example, be that Medicaid, Medicare, the ACA, SNAP benefits, which we call food share here in Wisconsin, Badger Care? Call us and tell us about it, or text in 855-752-4842. One of the other things that I have heard in various ways, shapes, and forms throughout my career, Kristen, is I have been probably at times to a fault pretty outspoken about pretty much everything.
Everything, yeah.
Right. I think you and I might have this in common. And I know that I have at times paid a price for that. But I'm also curious to hear from women out there that might be listening to us. Do you feel safe speaking out either in your family? Do you feel safe if your husband is a Trump voter saying, I think you're completely nuts if you disagree? Do you feel safe speaking out in your church communities? Or do you have fear about speaking out? 855-752-4842. We've got Joe on the line from Madison. Joe, please say hi to Dr. Lyerly, and what would you like to share this afternoon?
Hi, Dr. Wiley. I'm nearly near tears when I think of this. I hope that any women who are listening to this, who are going through a hard time, hear a subtext that you and the doctor were talking about. When you said, doctor, that your family had been on food stamps when you were young, and now you're a medical doctor. Maggie, when you spoke of the hard times that your father was going through, but you made it to law school, and now here you are. My dad, during the Depression, his mother was a widow. That my dad talked about times when his mother said to him, if you want something to eat, you have to go out and shoot something because we have no food. There still are a lot of people in Wisconsin for whom the butchering of a deer that someone catches lasts them for a very, very long time. I hope that one message that comes through all of this is that people realize that this is one moment in your life and it doesn't define you. Don't feel ashamed about it. Don't feel bad about it. It happens to many, many people that they are food insecure, that things are going poorly, and it's not the only moment in your life. There will be other moments, and I know that there may be people listening who just don't want to talk about it. It makes them feel bad. Please understand that things can change in your life, and this one moment in time does not define you and your family. Things can change. Thanks a lot for the opportunity to speak.
So much in what Joe from Madison had to say. Thank you for calling in. What Joe's talking about is the politics of shame and judgment and the concept of deserve, that if you need help, you must be ashamed. You must have done something wrong, that you do not deserve help if you fall on hard times. And what Joe and what Dr. Lyerly and I are trying to say is that it happens in every family. Mm-hmm. It happens to working people. And it is nothing to be ashamed of, and we need to speak now. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Women, you go to the top of the caller list. Please join Dr. Lyerly and I. What are your fears and experiences in the wake of the big, brutal bill? We continue this discussion on the other side. Keep it locked. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Wednesday. We are in the 4:30 half an hour block. I'm joined by Dr. Lyerly. And what does that mean, everybody together now? It is time for Broad Appeal. Today, a special installment. We want to hear from you, especially you ladies out there in our listening audience, about your struggles trying to make it work in your family. Have you had to choose between eating yourself and feeding your kids and rent and healthcare? Have you ever had to delay healthcare? Maybe even on something that was really critical because your family couldn't afford it. Have you ever been overwhelmed and then kicked off of an insurance program because of the freaking paperwork. My goodness, it shouldn't be this hard to get basic health care. 855-752-4842. What are your fears? What are your concerns about the big, brutal bills impacts in your family? And we're adding a layer of questions here in this second block. And that is, have you ever been, frankly, scared or confused by a government official? Has somebody ever bullied you from the government? We want to hear from you. Your stories matter here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 855-752-4842. We've got our friend Ollie from the Northwoods on the line. Say hi to Dr. Lyerly. What you got for us, Ollie?
Hi, Dr. Lyerly and Maggie. I can answer yes to so many of those questions. When my kids were little, yes, I did skip meals, and I still do now because of medical expenses and stuff. Sometimes I have to ration my meds, which I know isn't a good idea, but that's the way it is. And I can't see it getting any better. I'm homebound, and I do pay insurance, and I pay a lot for the insurance, which means that by the time you pay the insurance, you have a hard time still paying copays on meds and stuff. And I worry that if I lose that insurance because I have pre-existing illnesses, then what will happen? Yeah. And I also worry about being older, and if I need because of my health, I'm able to stay in my little home right now, but I always thought that there would be a time when I would need to go to a nursing home. But now, with the way the government is now, there may not be an option of being able to go to a nursing home for anybody. So there are a lot of things to think about these days.
Thanks so much, Ollie. You have bravely shared your struggles and journey before. I appreciate you so much. Kristen, your reactions.
It's just heartbreaking, all of it. Ollie, I am so sorry. And to know that you're having to ration your medications, it just scares me as a physician, because you're on those medications for a reason. And if you're not able to take them as directed, I am so sorry. And I promise personally, and this is my pledge to you and to everyone out there, I'm going to continue to fight so we all can get access to healthcare, because it is a human right. In this, the wealthiest country on earth, we are taking healthcare away from our citizens in order to give tax breaks to people who own private jets. Are you kidding me? We're taking away healthcare from moms and babies who live in rural parts of our country in order to give giant tax breaks and increase the deficit. It just doesn't make any sense. And we already have the worst outcomes amongst peer countries in the civilized world. So it's only going to get worse. But there's some hope here. And I heard it with Joe. It is the taking care of each other. It's the supporting each other. It's having conversations and just reminding each other that you are not alone, that we all have tough times. And when we band together and we organize, we can get things done.
Yeah, and I think sharing stories and getting real and speaking out is part of that journey. One thing that Ollie's comments really triggered in me is that when people have these times of need, they are often compounding needs. Housing insecurity then leads to food insecurity. Those things can lead to job loss, which increases the cycle. Then you lose, if you had broadband, you lose it. Then you're trying to navigate the paperwork, and how do you get the housing, and how do you get to your job? If you can find people that are in these times of distress, it's not one problem and I'll sit down for a few hours on a Saturday when I don't have to work and just figure it out. That isn't how it works in the real world. And folks that think it is, please talk to some people who have been through this. I bet you know a bunch of them. I bet you may sit next to them on a pew or a bar stool. Be open to the reality of what's happening to working families like Ollie's, like yours, Kristen's, like mine, and like my producer, Jamie's, who shared this via text. When her young son was 3 and diagnosed with Asperger's, their family's income hit the threshold, too high to get any assistance or help in any way, but too poor to afford the insurance. They only were allocated 10 occupational therapy appointments for an entire year, went through them in 2 weeks, and had to spend thousands out of pocket to help their kid become the best person he could be. I've paid for Cobra myself a few times and emptied my pocketbooks of thousands. Thank you to Dr. Lyerly. When we come back after the top of the hour, I'll be joined by State Senator Chris Larson. We're going to discuss how to bring Democrats together to fight this pain that we're experiencing. And we've got more breaking news on the Governor Evers re-election front. A governor spokesperson responds to the claims that he's not running. Stay tuned here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.